The Breakdown with Bethany is a mom.com podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of The Breakdown with Bethany. I'm Bethany Bronsilva, and I'm really excited for today's guest because she is a friend of mine. Haven Burton is a prolific Broadway actress and a mom of three. And we actually met, oh my gosh, I mean, I want to say 20 years ago, but I think that would be a lie. It's more than 20 years ago at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. We were both enrolled in the Drama Conservatory there in a even more intense program called ETW, or the Experimental Theater Wing. And we have that shared experience, and it sort of bonded us for life. But I'm really excited to get to talk to Haven because, as I mentioned, she has this incredible career on Broadway, having originated many roles that, you know, in Shrek. She did Fiona on tour. She was in Rent. She was in so many shows, and you're going to learn a little bit about her experience, or a lot about her experience. And actually, most recently, she was in the show and actually co-produced it, the show called How to Dance in Ohio, which is based off the hit documentary. This is a really, really important show. It really is shining a light on neurodivergent people, kids. And I'm sad to say that the show has closed, and Haven reveals that actually in the interview. But I don't think it's the last we're going to see of this show. It has a very, very important message. And of course, it's not the last we're going to see of Haven. So take a listen to this interview, and of course, support local theater, the arts, any chance you get is incredibly important to me. It's a little bit of my history. So I hope you enjoyed this episode where I get to catch up with a good friend.
Hi.
Hey. Oh my goodness. Hello, friend.
Has it been a few years or what?
Just a couple years.
I am, you know, like when you like know somebody, like, and then you sort of watch them. I've been friends with you. I mean, I've been watching you. You are killing it with like motherhood and the career. I'm so proud of you. I really am.
Well, the sentiment is echoed here because I've been watching you too, and you're nailing it with motherhood and career and all that. Isn't it fun?
It's so fun and wild. And I say in my intro that like I pre-record like that we know each other. So can we like, let's just dive in, because a lot of it is us going to be catching up, and then like we'll talk about everything amazing you're doing now on the show and all of that. But like, we know each other, we have kind of the shared, I don't know, it's not trauma, I don't want to say trauma, but like this very unique experience of going to a drama, being in a drama conservatory program together. And what I remember about you, Haven, and I'm going to let you talk, I'll talk a lot at the top, and then I'm going to let you go, was that you were so advanced. You were advanced in like personality, like humor, talent. You were just like, you are. So like, tell me about, from your perspective, going into NYU, Tisch School of the Arts, the Experimental Theater Wing. And like, this is us catching up so many years later.
So many years later. You know what it was? I chose, first of all, advanced. I was older. You have to remember that, right? I was older by a couple of years. So I didn't live on campus. I never lived in the dorms. I didn't have that experience ever in my life. So, you know, NYU was like a weird, it's a weird campus. But if you're not living in the dorms, you really feel very disconnected from it. You just feel like a New Yorker that happens to be taking classes on the second floor.
Very expensive.
Studio. And at ETW, do you just see a lot of people, like a lot of your friends, naked all the time? So it was just, it went, when I, like, intimate, yes. Drama is I always say this because I, as I teach now, I think I understand, agree with some things, and also disagree with some like older version of the conservatory method, which is to tear people down before you build them up, or to crack them in half to really get to the gooey center. And I think that there doesn't necessarily need to be any brokenness to heal. Like, you can absolutely be a good artist and not be broken. So I think that was my takeaway as an adult when I look back on our conservatory. Does that resonate with you at all?
100% it resonates. There was lots of tears and outbursts, and and even though there is some serious work, and of course you have to do that soul searching, like I was also just there to have a good time.
Yeah,
That
I mean,
was
that's an expensive good time, but yes. I
my reason. I know. Oh my God, I'm still paying for it. Oh my God.
know.
But yes, I agree. I'm so glad you said that, because that seems it's a gentler approach, I feel like, what you're doing. And I'm glad you teach. Tell me about your teaching.
Oh, you know, I teach master, I've taught master classes for probably a couple of years, just through a couple different programs. I love teaching students and doing like little one day workshops, mostly with shows that I've done in the past with schools that are doing a production of a show that I've participated in. But then this last year and a half, I started teaching some classes out here in New Jersey and teaching a lot younger students, which at first was really challenging for me because I like to get into like the ooey gooey stuff right away. But with them, it's like, let's use our imaginations. And being a mom, it was really, really fun. And also I just realized how much I love children in general, like not just my children, but like other people's children, and how beautiful children are, and how creative every one of us is. And you don't it like talent is not the equivalent of creativity. That you can you we are all inherently creative people, whether we bring that creativity to finances or to problem solving or to parenting or to relationships or to you know, vocational arts, whatever that is, but that we're all creative beings, right? And that's inherently in all of us. So I think that's something that I that was like one of my takeaways from teaching that I kind of that's like my whole filter that I view life through and each individual through now.
That's a beautiful filter, and I'm sure you cultivate a lot of patience through that filter for sure. Okay, so we went to NYU together. Now we graduated. And it seemed like you kind of, I mean, I know it's never easy, especially doing that sort of that Broadway hustle, right? But take us through the years after graduating NYU, and like take us through like as much as you want to. I mean, you're in a hit show right now, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I guess like a like fast forwarded version is, you know, we when I graduated from NYU, I didn't have an agent anymore, or representation. And but my friends that I had done the Rent tour with prior to going to NYU had now transferred and were in the Broadway company. And I remember one of them, my friend Justin, called me and said, "Hey, our Mrs. Cohen is leaving. You should come in for it." So I just called the production office, honestly, and was like, "Hey, I don't have representation, but I'd love to audition for this." And they said, "Great, you know, we do have to audition for you because audition you because it's been a long time." So I went in, I auditioned, I got a call like an hour later. It was with, you know, the director and the musical director, and it was I felt after graduating. You know, I'd been taking voice lessons with my teacher that I'm still with. Her name's Katie Foffel, and she really changed my career, honestly. She like gave me my voice back in a lot of really amazing and groundbreaking ways personally. So I made my debut and in Rent, and then from Rent I went to Legally Blonde, and then while I was in Legally Blonde, I was doing workshops for Shrek, and then left Legally Blonde to do Shrek out of town and on Broadway, and then left when we closed. Shrek went on tour as Fiona, so I originated Fiona on tour, and then did that for a while, and that's when my husband and I got engaged, married, and pregnant. on tour.
Like a triple
I know.
whammy. Oh my
I
God.
know. We were like, let's just do everything hard in one fell swoop. So we did that. We stayed out in LA, which is where I'm from. We bought a house. We tried that for a little bit, and then my husband, who's in the company of Chicago right now, got a call 12 years ago and said, "Hey, can you come back to the company?" So we moved back to New York, which we thought was temporary, but ended up we're still here. So, although now we've moved out to New Jersey. And then coming back to performing after being a mother was very, I don't know exactly the word to describe it, but it was definitely surprising in the fact that I felt like I had to start all over again. Our industry, especially 12 years ago, was not really supportive of, to say the least, of women, who had chosen to have families, from top to bottom. Like, our schedule doesn't support that. Our health insurance didn't support maternity leave. You know, any woman that's working on a Broadway contract or equity contract and gets pregnant loses their health insurance shortly after delivering their baby because they haven't been able to work. So
Okay.
it's there's just a lot of really strange dynamics that I was coming back into and a perspective that I had not experienced. And so I did start over a little bit, and then I did I got a my first job back was covering for four women, four of my friends actually, and a show called Nobody Loves You at Second Stage that was off Broadway, very short run. And it was fine. It was fun. After that, my friend Jen Simard called me and said, "Hey, I'm doing this really funny show called Disaster at the St. Luke's Theater, and I think that you'd be really great for it. Will you come and meet Seth?" So I went and read with
That's Seth.
Seth Rudetsky. Yes, Seth Rudetsky. Yeah. So we hung out, and he hired me to play this character, and we did this production of Disaster at the St. Luke's Theater. We had four shows a week. I got paid $75 a show and had to pay my babysitter $76 a night. So I lost a dollar for every performance, which was
Wait,
really funny.
wait, David, this is. I mean, it's funny in retrospect because clearly you have a roof over your head and the baby's okay. But holy shit, this is what we do. This is what we do. This is ambition. This is motherhood. This is all of it. Wait, that should be like, I'm like thinking like this is going to be the name of your book. I don't know. This is too good. Okay, keep going. Keep going.
So, you know, we did Disaster, which was great. While I was in Disaster, I was still auditioning. I auditioned for Violet, which was coming to Broadway for the first time, and Sutton Foster was in the title role, and I auditioned to be her standby, and I booked that, which was great. So then I left Disaster, and Disaster actually closed like 2 months after that, so it was a great little. I didn't feel like I was missing out too much, but Disaster was really fun, and I mean, it was probably one of the closest things that I had done that was reminiscent of like being at ETW, which was just like pure, unequivocal joy, silliness. Yeah, it was really fun, and just a lot of like we bonded as a cast. In a very deep and wonderful, loving way. And then I guess I don't know how deep do we go with this. I got Violet, and I went and I did Violet. Hudson was like a year and a half, maybe 2 years at that point. And my dad was diagnosed with a glioblastoma brain cancer, and they had given him 3 months to live.
We and
So I,
sorry to interrupt you there. We also have experience with that. My mother-in-law passed from that, and she had it was 10 months from diagnosis to passing. So that's horrific. I'm so sorry you went through that.
thank you. And art has a really beautiful way of like showing up for you in those moments of grief too. And the Violet was great. I got to go on twice. Which was really exciting. I'm actually the only other person that has ever played the role on Broadway. And it was just a great experience. And then from Violet, I left early to replace Jenna DeWall at Kinky Boots as Lauren. And then I continued to do that part two other times. So I played Lauren in three different runs on Broadway, which was really, really fun. My dad passed away actually 6 years ago. So he lived for 3.5 years. He battled it, two brain surgeries, constant radiation and chemotherapy, basically. But it was Kinky Boots especially. I lost my grandmother and I was dealing with the weird transitional space of losing my dad during that moment. And when I left Kinky Boots the final time, my third time, I was pregnant with my second child. And then started to work on another show called Gotta Dance. And then eventually it turned into Halftime, where I played a, which is good, maybe the furthest from ATW training, where I played a NBA cheerleader, an ex-NBA cheerleader that was the hip hop coach to a senior citizen dance team.
Of course you did. This is,
Yeah.
yeah, sure. I love it.
That was an interesting part. And then we did that at the paper mill. We did an out of town in Chicago. And then my dad got a chance to come to see me in that. That was the last time he saw me perform. And then he passed while I was pregnant with my second child. And then after my son was born, we did that production again under a different name called Halftime at the Paper Mill Playhouse and had just moved to New Jersey. So I was only about 10 minutes away from where we were performing, which was amazing. And I'm trying to think, that was the first time that I had performed after the passing of my dad. And then shortly after that closed, I found out that I was pregnant with my third child.
You did this
And
three times. Wow.
yes, we did the deed three times. And that third one was a surprise. And it was hard because after each time of having a child, I felt like I had to come back and start all over again. You know, there was a, fortunately, when I had Caspian, I had several shows that I was already working on in development of. I was working on the Cher show and I was working on Halftime, Gotta Dance. So I knew that I would have work after having the baby, but there definitely was a lot of pressure to like get back into shape and to be the person that I was before I became a mother of two. And that was an interesting, I don't know if I was putting that pressure on myself or if it was external or in, I don't know whether it was ex internal or external or combination of both, right? But then the pandemic happened after my little girl was about 6 months, and then the shutdown happened, and so none of us worked for 18 months. And then I came back after that working on this piece that I'm doing right now, kind of came to me, and I guess I don't know. I could literally you asked a big question, Bethany.
I know. Well, because you, well, this is, it's such a prolific career. And I mean, and I think it's interesting because I haven't had anyone on, like, you know, like who's worked on Broadway, especially as extensively as you have. And it's very interesting to see this sort of, you know, what the jobs are. I mean, like you do short stints here, longer stints here. You did Kinky separate times. It's a very interesting thing. And, you know, this show really is about highlighting mothers. And you did the bulk of this while raising your family. So it's very, it is so interesting. And please, no, keep going, because leading up to it is this incredible show that was a documentary film and is getting rave reviews. And you are, I mean, it is so important, like just the whole topic. So go ahead. So let's finish. Let's well, not finish. Let's keep going.
So I think the season that I'm in right now, kind of the genesis story of it is that my friend who I had worked with before, his partner is a composer, and they work with a few companies that are like in theater education, and they help with fundraising. They asked me to participate in a fundraiser with a company called the Penguin Project. The Penguin Project is a beautiful company that started in Peoria, Illinois, and now has over 53 chapters across the nation. And essentially, what their mission is to highlight and star individuals with disabilities in lead pro as leads in their productions. They do one production a year, and each star with a disability has a typical developing peer or mentor that accompanies them to help them in and support them in any way that they may need during the production or the rehearsal process. And this appealed to me because I have three kids, and two of my children have disabilities. My oldest is on the autism spectrum. My middle child is typical developing, but my wild card. And my third, my little girl, has Down syndrome. And I had just had her when I was invited to participate with this company. And I thought, wow, this is really neat how I'm getting this connection, right away to a community. I don't really know much about, but I find myself in, right? Life has put me in this community and I'm learning about it. And then how can I contribute with what I have with my toolbox to help companies like this raise funds, awareness, education, community? So I sang this song with a friend of mine called Getting Ready for the Dance that was beautiful. And my friend Jacob said, oh, it's a musical that we've been working on for a few years based on this documentary. You should really watch it. So I did. I watched the documentary and I just fell in love with it. I thought it was beautiful. And then over time, he would ask me to come and sing the song again. And then one day he said, hey, we're doing a reading and we would love for you to play this role of Teresa. And I said, great. I did not think that I was going to be age appropriate or right. I didn't know if I was right for that part anyway, because the last time I played a part, I was 28. I mean, my character was 28, so it was like transitioning to this like motherhood role
Right.
sometimes feels like on Broadway, they cast a lot older,
Got it.
right?
Yeah.
I was actually fired from the Cher show from playing the mother because I was too young.
Okay.
It's like, okay, so I haven't really transitioned into like mom roles yet, even though I'm a mom. People
Right.
don't write for us. They write mom roles a lot older, right? They don't write for actual moms.
Sure. I'm turning 40 this year, so I'm like bring it on.
I'm turning 44 in like a couple weeks. So it's this weird place where I'm like, I'm not old enough, but I'm not young enough, and I don't know where to go, and nobody knows what to do with
I'm
me.
not a girl, not yet a woman. I don't
Britney Spears. Exactly.
know.
So we did a couple of readings and then they announced that we were doing an out of town last year up in Syracuse at Syracuse Stage, which was awesome. And we got a chance to develop that piece, and my son got to come and see it. He was 10 at the time, and I remember him looking up at me and asking him, I said, what did you think of the show? And he said, I mean, I just didn't know that there were people who think just like me. And I thought, okay, this is why we're doing it. So my husband and I found ourselves in a position where we were able to financially invest in the show. And then we were invited to co-produce, which we hadn't done before. And we were always interested in it. I gave all the business aspect over to my husband, who did a brilliant job co-producing and fundraising along with our partner, Elora. And it's been a wonderful adventure and also heartbreaking. So I don't know if you're aware, but our show closes this Sunday. Even though we've got great reviews, even though we've got sold-out performances, it's just creating new art in this landscape, in this economy on Broadway is very difficult. And but that doesn't mean it's not worthwhile.
Right.
So, we're doing something different with a lot of heart and a big mission and message behind it and a culture shift. And that takes, I don't know, it's very interesting. I think, post reopening, after COVID, the landscape is just very different. And so we're kind of trying to figure out what is how to be successful, how to be a successful show at this period in time. While tourism still, we don't have the tourism that we had pre-pandemic. So yeah, it's just an interesting thing. So while it's closing after a short 2 month official run, I really feel so proud of what we've accomplished, because I feel like we did accomplish what we came to do, which was to crack open stereotypes of people with disabilities at this level of theater in a performance capacity, and a creative team capacity. We have debuted 41 people involved in our production made their Broadway debut with this production, which is so beautiful. What was that? Oh, we have our seven core cast members who are all autistic actors playing autistic characters, and each of their understudies is also autistic. And that has never been done before on a Broadway stage. So what it does is it feels so promising and so hopeful that we've started a conversation and are continuing to push this narrative of access and representation in theater, in the arts, and beyond the brick and mortar of our show, really pushing the conversation to change the industry's perspective at large by offering trainings and workshops for other theater builders, performers, investors to participate in, and hopefully create a more accessible, understanding, kind, human, inclusive environment.
Yeah,
And that brings me to this week.
I'm so I actually didn't know that. I've only heard the incredible things and and all the groundbreaking things. I watched you during the Thanksgiving Day parade, like all of this stuff. So, and again, I don't know so much about like the inner workings of Broadway, but I can't imagine this would be like the end, like things do right. And so I'm hoping, and because I do think it's so important, and so hoping and also I'll, praying like that this place finds itself in front of an audience very soon. I mean, why not? Like, I mean, I just see this in high schools, right? Like, I mean, like this is like the perfect show to be done like across the nation, across the world, like in high school. So let's hopefully this we can get it a little bit more, I don't know, amplify it a little bit more. Whatever I can do to help, please let
Thank
me know.
you.
But that's interesting. I didn't know you were a producer or co-producer on it. I love that you did that with your husband. Can we talk a little bit about the kids? Are they like, do they, I know your husband's an actor, you're an actor. Do they have any of that? Like, I mean, what is it like in this household?
It's very loud.
Have they inherited your guys, your singing talents? Like what?
Yeah, they have. I think so. My son actually is in sixth grade, and they're doing, his first school production, and they're doing Matilda, and he's playing Bruce.
Bruce.
And he's playing Bruce, and he's very excited about it. He's a real ham. He wants to actually be a film director. He loves that medium. And he loves being behind the camera versus in front. But I think that he's getting a little taste of performing and really enjoying it. And he's wonderful. He's got a great heart. And I think what I'm excited about in terms of him performing and like exploring this in school is the community aspect of it. Like there's nothing like theater kids, right? Because we're all just a bunch of oddballs out, and then we find each other, we find our people, and then you find this unconditional acceptance and love and the appreciation for the gifts and quirks that you bring to it, because those have value versus out in the world where, people don't value those kinds of things in the same way. So he's really great. And Caspian is my 6-year-old. He's in kindergarten, and his voice is tremendous. Why? He is singing. He had this, I'll share a little anecdote actually. He's the one that like will sneak into our bed in the middle of the night and sleep with us. And well, it was like a couple weeks ago, he woke up and he said, in his like in-between state, he said, "If I ever have a dance off or a sing off in life, I'm gonna win because I've been practicing in my dreams."
That's beautiful.
And then he followed through with that conversation later in the morning and said that he had a coach. He has a coach that's coaching him for sing-offs and dance-offs in his sleep so that he's prepared in life when that happens. He's going to win.
I mean,
So.
like, that makes a lot of sense to me. I have a whole other life and world that goes on in my head, and I actually don't have to be asleep, so.
I know. And then Nova is the mayor of her school and kind of the mayor of anywhere she goes. She's like, "Hi, this is my world. You're welcome to it." So she definitely is a real ham. We actually got the kids a karaoke machine for Christmas and it was really fun. They love it.
I love it. That's so great. My kids are so like shy. I have an 11-year-old in sixth grade as well, and he's so uptight. And I'm like, let's party. Let's do it. I mean, he has his moments, but he's like very like, But so I love because sometimes I do miss it. Like I do miss like I just remember us like always performing,
Oh.
climbing on each other. And like I think that's what I loved about being at NYU and just that community, the camaraderie, the create the being you could do be and say
The
and
freeness.
whatever you want. Yeah. And so
Yeah.
when I try to recreate that in my own home, that my I have two boys and they just everyone's like, all right, enough, enough. Take that somewhere else. Take that
You're
somewhere
like, "Come on, let's do some contact improv."
else. Oh my God, you said it. Oh my God. And okay, so we have about a few minutes left. And if you're comfortable, Haven, because we have a lot of moms on here, did you and again, you tell me I don't want to talk about it, it's totally fine. With Nova, did you know prior to giving birth that she was gonna have Down syndrome?
I did. We had, because of my age, we had genetic screening that happened,
Okay.
and we got the diagnosis in a really terrible way. The genetic counselor called me and told me on the phone while we were at the mall getting Christmas pictures with Santa Claus. And after she had gone through all the numbers, because you get the conversation can get a little cloudy, and then I remember asking, "Well, are we having a boy or a girl?" And she said, "Oh, it's female." And I said, then everything kind of went away and I was just overjoyed. I
Yeah.
called another friend of mine, whose name is Neely, who's in the business, and she has a daughter with Down syndrome. And that's who I called first.
Yeah.
And because I've seen her daughter is in all of these amazing campaigns, she's got Target ads, she's got Zara ads, she's like all over the place, beautiful. And Neely is an amazing advocate and incredible mom. And I thought I need to call Neely right now and talk to her about it. And there was, it was a beautiful moment. She just said, "Congratulations, you're having." And we just got to be really excited about that because I had two boys, right? Which I love too, but it was nice to bring to not be outnumbered in my house, at least for a little bit, So it was great. And we did know, and I'll actually say Nova was also diagnosed with two holes in her heart. And through the process of the pregnancy, that was really what our prayer was for her to be healthy. And we prayed a lot. We prayed a lot for being healthy. And I did everything that I could to kind of support her in that development in utero. And at our last pediatric cardiology appointment, we were about to discuss where she would have open heart surgery. We were planning her team and what hospital she would be at. And he scanned me for 45 minutes
Wow.
and we couldn't find them. I mean, these are measurable holes. I'm not talking tiny things. We are measuring them. They were moderate in size, not small. And they were gone. So she was in my mind, miraculously healed and spared from that. And she came out absolutely perfect. We actually had different names for her. And then when she came out, the doctors and the nurses said, oh, she's so light, not in weight. She was like,
Yeah.
it looked like she was glowing. And I thought, oh no, now we're going to have to find a light themed name. And we went with Nova. And she spent about 13 days in the NICU just for her oxygen levels, but she was perfectly healthy otherwise and absolutely beautiful. And honestly, up until recently, has been my easiest kid.
It's funny how
Just to
that
say.
happens, right? They get older, the more I've heard, and I again, I only have boys, that boys are easier. No, they're harder in the beginning and then easier as they grow, and girls are the opposite. Like harder.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm saying. Like because they're more mellow, they're not as like feral, but like maybe,
Yes.
and then like, then all the girly stuff comes into play and you're just like a shit out of luck. 'Cause I remember myself, like I was a terrible.
Yeah.
But this has been really, really great connecting, and I'm so glad that not only you have this amazing Broadway community, but you have this community of moms. You mentioned your friend Neely, and I would love for you to tell. So if we're I have mom listening to this podcast, and she just got a diagnosis of Down syndrome for her baby, what would you love to tell her?
Oh gosh, that there is just the first thing that I would say is that we can't choose our children. We can do everything that we think is going to, make X, Y, and Z fall into place. But ultimately, every child is a gift, regardless of what diagnosis or what version of this child that you get. And what I mean is, you don't know what their personalities are going to be. You don't know if you're going to get along even sometimes. You work hard towards all these things, but there's so many variables and factors. And what I would say in terms of diagnosis is it's going to be okay. Everything is going to be fine. People with Down syndrome, I think the statistic is 99.999% of people with Down syndrome report on loving their life and having a beautiful existence. And while there are some challenges, it's a false narrative to say that children don't have challenges. Every child has their, we all as people have our own set of challenges. And while those might look different, I'm a firm believer in the fact that diversity in every aspect is really important. I look at it almost in a gardening term, like a diverse garden is a healthy and happy garden. And that includes people that have different perspectives on life. And people with Down syndrome, people within the disability community at large, have different perspectives and different experiences that are valuable and make our world a more beautiful place. Down syndrome is not scary. Down syndrome is just a part of your child. Your child is going to be more like you than they are going to be like other people with Down syndrome. I think that's a big misunderstanding, or maybe, what were you going to say, Dan?
Oh, just that, it's what you were just saying. That
Yeah.
it's.
You're more alike. They're like us.
Yeah.
Nova is like us, she's our child and more like her brothers. And that includes, our expectations for her. We always say no expectations, no limitations, right? Nova's shown us a beautiful thing, which is that, and something that I now apply not only to my own children, but to myself as well, and to the people around me, is that we're all going to show what we're going to do. Like we give her the openness to say there's no expectation, there's no limitation. So she's going to meet her goals when she's ready to meet them developmentally. Not, and there's not a good measurement of that or a bad measurement of that. It's just here to tell us how we can best support her and how to understand her the best. And I wish that we applied that knowledge to everybody, because how many children do you know, like that we grew up with that didn't have a diagnosis or didn't that had challenges and without supports, but are doing wonderfully now? I think one of the things, like when you're struggling with potty training, even with any child, they're like, don't worry, by the time they're in college, they will not be in diapers, right?
You're so
Here's open. But that expectations that we set on ourselves, our children, on other people are usually based on like institutions and not necessarily based on like what it means to be a human being. And everything will be fine. Well, it's such a big question. So I'm sorry if I went all over the place, but essentially find community, right? Take a deep breath. Life is a gift. And no other person's story will define your own story or their story, right? You have the power to make your own story. I say all the time, we're so fortunate to have Nova and our children in this time when so many people have fought, so many families have fought for their family members ahead of us. And we get to experience what that looks like. All these supports that Nova has, all these therapies that she has, her life looks so different than a person from 25 years ago that was born 25 years ago, because we have so much now. And it's also our privilege and responsibility to kind of step into that place and to fight for even more, right? For our kids, for everybody's kids. So that was a
Absolutely.
big question. Sorry if I am all over the place, but
I've asked you a ton of big questions, but I think my meeting's going to cut out because I haven't
okay.
paid for the I have the free version of Zoom. This has been incredible. I love you.
I love you.